Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, and welcome to Operation Earth, conversations with comedians about climate change, hosted by me, Dr. Matt Winning. I've been an environmental researcher for the last decade, and also a stand-up comedian for almost the same amount of time. For years, I used comedy really as an escape in the evenings to stop thinking about how terrible everything was on this planet. But now I think it's time we talk about it, hence this podcast. So in each episode, I speak to a different special guest comedian about what's been happening recently to our planet, what they are doing about it, and any of their worries or questions they have about planet Earth. But it's going to be funny. It's a podcast for anyone who cares about the planet, but probably isn't doing much about it. This is for you.
It's presented by Dr. Matt Winning.
Okay, so today's episode is me chatting to Josie Long, who is a terrific comedian. She was nominated for the Edinburgh Comedy Award 3 times because she's good, really, really good, and I always forget how good she is, and then I see her doing stand-up and I'm like, oh yeah, she's one of the best. She's got a new show this year in Edinburgh called Tender, which I'm going to check out as soon as I possibly can. She's also done a lot of other things. She created something called Arts Emergency, which is amazing. She's got a podcast with her partner, Johnny, called Josie and Johnny Are Having a Baby, because she's had a baby. And she also makes loads of films, which is pretty cool, sort of indie stuff. And that was actually one of the times that we spent a bit of time together, because I was in a film that she made last year. Actually, it was 2 years ago we made it, came out last year, called Super November, which you should check out if you possibly can. So yeah, I had a chat with Josie about climate change because we often text back and forth about it anyway. So I thought it'd be good to sit down and have a chat. So this is that. I hope you enjoy it. Here we go. So we're joining as Josie Long gets her carbon footprint.
Oh, it's not too bad.
Which is about 11.8 tonnes, which I think is probably thus far the best person on the podcast. Which is only, it gives you a little thing here, 119% of what we need to be roughly at as a target. How do you feel about that?
I feel...
slightly relieved?
I feel relieved, but also this year has been an unusual year for me insofar as I've had a baby.
Yes.
Which a lot of people go to me, that's the worst thing you could do for the climate. So it's like going, oh, well, and you've done really well this year. Oh, yeah, I've been in prison for murder. Oh, that's why. Also, it's been interesting too, because before I got pregnant, I gave up eating meat apart from, I basically said I'd have one meat meal a week because I was a real meat fan. And then as soon as I got pregnant, I was like, oh, you just have to eat meat all the time. And so I'm trying to, when my daughter's a year old, I'm trying to go back to my previous life.
Right.
But I've cut out real milk and I've cut out real soft cheese.
Yeah.
Which just sounds like nothing, but...
why soft, wait a minute, soft cheese?
Yeah, well, I used to love Philadelphia.
Right.
I'd be like, oh, what a delicious treat. Yeah. And then I found this thing called Violife cream cheese. Yeah. So good.
Is it good?
And it's been the first time, because for about 10 years, I've got a friend who's a very conscious vegetarian and he gave up dairy for compassionate reasons.
Right.
And he'd always say to me, like, about the dairy industry, and I'd be like, yes, but I feel for the farmers and the cows and all this stuff, and I love milk. And then I found Violife cream cheese, which is better than Philadelphia, so I was like, easy switch. And then oat milk.
Yeah.
Everyone must be saying
it's so good. Oat milk, yeah. I mean, it's what I do. I basically was just saying that's my main thing that I've done in the last year is just completely switched to oat milk. But I was saying it's always really weird when I have it on porridge.
Oh no! It's like mayonnaise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's so weird. And it's like, especially being Scottish, I feel...
Do you feel deep fried?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm having oats on my oats. It's just...
Do you put salt in the milk and salt on the fries?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Salty milk. But yeah, no, it is great. It's so easy. It's like what you're saying, like, it's so easy when you find something that you like better. You go... Oh, my life's changed. So, like,
there's nothing to worry about. But this is the sad problem. I think, for people to, when it's, especially when it's little lifestyle switches, it's like when people are trying to lose weight or something.
Yeah.
And they're like, I've got to exercise. It's never going to work unless you go, oh, I love mountain climbing.
Yes.
And then suddenly you sort of change your life.
It's a really good way of putting it. It's like, yeah, if you get really into something, great. But if it's like, you're going to have to be forced to go mountain climbing once a week. You're not like, a huge fan.
No. But this is the hard thing for me, like meat and cheese.
Yeah.
I hate the idea of having to say I can never have meat or cheese again.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of trying to find a way where it's a bit more like what people might have done in the 15th century. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, it's Michaelmas, so of course I'll have a hen. You know, or like, what, Mr. Stevens has made some of his cheese as he does once a year. And I figure if I got back to that,
yeah.
Like, yes, it is not perfect, but we're not striving for perfection. We're striving for like...
We're not, yeah, 100%. We're not striving for perfection. We're striving for just a nice...
Sustainable
life. Yeah, exactly. We'll get on to like the bigger... Obviously, this whole podcast isn't about like individual people's choices. I think it's just a good way of chatting at the start of it.
But also, I get really angry when people bring up like... Oh, well, you know, you think you care about climate, but you've flown. I'm like, yes, but Matthew Winning has told me via my boyfriend, through my boyfriend saw his show, that most of the flights are taken by the same 1% of people to and from tax havens. And I'm not doing that.
So the actual flying numbers here are based on international passenger survey data. And if you have a look on freeride.org, they give you a bunch of information. It's things like how half of the British population don't fly at all in any given year, and only 15% of us take 3 or 4 or more flights a year. So that 15% takes 70% of all of the flights, and they tend to correlate with ownership of a second home abroad and a household income of more than £115,000 a year. And they mostly are from the city of London and Westminster, Kensington, Chelsea and Surrey, and in aggregate, the most popular destinations are known tax havens. There you go.
I get so angry because I'm like, it's such whataboutery, really.
It is, yeah.
And like, I want to be greener because I want to change the culture for my daughter. So I want it to be a different, I want our generation just to live differently.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if anybody's like, well, I saw you having a steak, I'm like, yeah, the government should make it illegal. And they fucking haven't. You smoked in pubs and now you don't.
Yeah.
So sort it out.
Somebody needs to just lay down the law, get it sorted. Travel, I think you're doing pretty well on travel. I think it shows you that if you're a comedian, travel's going to be the big thing. And it's actually, even getting it under half is probably...
Oh, thanks.
Like, pretty good going. Now, you said in the house, your baby, you've turned the temperature down.
Yes. So we've had an inadvertently helpful thing. Because you just get advice that the ideal temperature for a baby is about 16 to 18 degrees.
Okay, so that's
so
quite
cool at night. Yeah.
And so that's, do you feel it's cool?
Yes, it's too cold for me. I'm like, baby's fine. Baby's like,
this is nice and warm.
But you get these things, this egg.
Right.
And the egg changes colour. And if it's clement for a baby, the egg is the correct colour. If it's too cold, the egg goes blue.
Oh.
If it's too hot, the egg goes red. You can't have a red egg. So you want a yellow egg.
What is this egg? This sounds like sci-fi to me.
New parents, and this is where it's not very green, new parents can often be sitting ducks for capitalism.
Yes.
So
okay.
It's a double-edged sword. Because on one hand, you are sitting down for capitalism. You go, the baby's got reflux. Oh, I'll go online. Oh, this wedge of foam is 50 quid. I'll get it. It's just a wedge of foam. I could have got it for £1. I could have made it out of a towel. But then at the same time, there's this incredible green economy of giving and sharing. So there's actually very little that we've bought, if anything. We didn't buy a cot for her. We got that. We didn't buy a change table. We got that. We didn't really buy any clothes. The amount of clothes I bought for is about 3 outfits. Everything else has come through. We don't We are not doing recycled nappies, but we are doing biodegradable nappies.
Okay, because I had a friend that told me a while ago, a good friend, and he was like, they're big into eco stuff, and he was like, we did reusable nappies sort of thing. And he was like, never do it. It is hell on earth.
I really think it is. Like, the problem is, disposable nappies came out of the fact that everyone hated doing reusable nappies.
Yeah.
And what everyone who's a boomer says to you is they go, we're so lucky these days. So we had to use terry cloth nappies. It was awful. And so I've seen lots of friends of mine doing reusable ones.
Yeah.
With sort of mixed reception.
Yeah.
But, oh gosh, it's hard. I've got a friend who's doing reusable wipes. She cut up lots of fleeces that she had knocking about and turned them into little wipes. Everything we do is biodegradable.
Got you.
But it's kind of like... It's like the difference between skim milk and then you've got like semi-skimmed and full cream are basically the same thing, and skimmed is water.
Yeah, nothing.
It's like, no, I'm very healthy too. I'm having semi-skimmed. It's like fuck you are. These guys are having grey water. You've got fat at the top of it. Bottled water. Those guys are fucking the most evil people on the planet. Firstly, what are they doing? They're going, oh, here's the thing that everyone used to just acknowledge. They were A, paying for through their rates, B, used to be nationalised, and C, had in their taps.
Yes.
Right? We're going to turn that into a commodity. And fuck the world! Like, what?
Because think about it, it's not only just the water, which is this resource that everybody in the world should have.
Yeah.
But also we're going to put it in plastic bottles.
Disposable plastic bottles.
Yeah. It's like you can invent something that seems more inherently against what we should be doing as people.
And also, whatever they do, it's immoral. So either they steal natural resources so they can pump them away from like impoverished communities, or like they did in Sidcup, which is where I'm from, basically. It found out that the Coca-Cola bottling plant in Sidcup was selling Dasani water, which was literally Sidcup tap water. And they were selling it like Dasani water. And it was like, it's Sidcup. Tap water is nothing. Sorry, yeah, bottled water. But I'm ashamed to say I haven't. What I've got is we've got plastic water bottles to keep.
Yeah.
Not single-use ones.
Yeah.
Although I wish I had a metal one.
Don't worry.
I bought them because I thought it was a useful thing for the environment.
I'm letting her use my metal water bottle just now because are you out of water?
Yeah, I've drunk it all.
Do you want me to come get you some more?
Oh, no, don't worry.
You sure?
I've poisoned the well because I'm a bit ill.
She's a little bit ill, and I thought, I can't have her not having water. Also, you were just shouting on stage, weren't you, a little bit? And you're... Keep hydrated.
Thank you.
You know?
See, but this is the other thing. All of the culture is telling us to keep hydrated. People are going crazy. My stepmom buys 6 packs of water just for the car, all the time. Because she cares about looking after everyone, making sure they're hydrated.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm trying to cut down on my uses of...
Of single-use stuff.
Yeah. And I made a resolution to start in January, but basically, I'm acknowledging that. I sort of feel like if you've got a new baby, you have a bit of a free pass to be a bit crap.
Yeah.
And I wish that society worked in that way. Yeah. I wish that society was like, look, you've got a baby.
Yeah.
Don't worry, we'll pick up the slack for you.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also feel like now I have a 1-year-old, I have to get my arse in gear.
It's really hard, isn't it? Yeah. Just, you're right. People should be given cut a little bit of slack then. But then now it's like, you've got another person to look after. You need to make sure that person is a good person that's doing lots of good stuff, but also you have half the amount of energy and time to do an impossible situation. All the stuff section, you went through that and you're pretty really good at that. You don't buy stuff because you don't have any pets. You've bought a mobile because that's it. Yeah, and apart from that, you spend no money really on like any other things, and you do all the recycling. So that was pretty strong.
Yeah, I don't buy that much stuff, I don't think. No. I definitely don't really buy that many clothes.
I'd say that's pretty on brand for you.
Yeah.
You're not a stuff. I wouldn't say you're a... I'd say if people think of Josie Long, if you say, oh, Josie Long, I don't think people would go, she likes stuff.
Yeah, I'm not a mercantile person. Johnny's even less than that. Johnny is disgusted by the fact that I have a flat's worth of furniture.
Right.
Like, I don't have decadent furniture. I have things you can sit on.
Just a seat.
Or eat at.
Yes.
Or I have books. And he had nothing. When he moved in, he was a bit like, oh, you've got so much stuff.
Wow.
But I really don't.
Yeah.
But the thing that was stressful with this counter is I think it's very unfortunate that we live in a situation where, God, how much, 40% of people are privately renting.
Yes.
Because, as we all know, all landlords are bastards.
Yep.
My landlord is pretty great. They're sweet. They're nice
people. I mean,
nice
I really
people.
Like my landlord, but
at the same time, in principle, whose side are they on? They're on the side of the bosses.
This is, I'm trying to write a little bit in for my new show about how the problem with the climate message has often been people say we only have one home, right? Globally, you know, the planet, we've only got one home. But the problem is all the people that are causing the problems have two or three homes.
Yeah, and that doesn't even count all the spare ones they people farm in.
Yeah, and so they don't quite get that. The messaging is never going to go in. If you're like, one home, what are you talking
about? It's
the pied-à-terre. Yeah, I've got a Tuscan villa. What are you talking about?
It's true.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, like, I know that people, if they hear me say that, who disagree with me, people just go, there are certain people who hear that and be like, oh, typical left. But I feel quite deeply that the culture we have of landlordism is sick, it's unhealthy, and it's exploitative. And the only arguments people ever give to defend landlordism, they'll be like, well, what are people supposed to do? And I'm like, yes, because there aren't any enough housing associations, because home ownership has been priced out of most people, it does feel like there aren't enough solutions.
In this current situation, there aren't. But
and private landlords have definitely loved exploiting that. That does not make it right. And also, like, it's just, it's depressing. Like, my view is that you shouldn't exploit people to make your money. My view is that if your money should come from your labour, not the labour of others. Yeah. And you can say, well, you know, it's actually quite hard being a landlord just for fixed boiler. No, fuck you. That's not how it works. It's not your labour, is it? It's your assets, your investments, etc. And I don't believe in that. Now, I'm a bit austere in that respect. I want to make money from my labour and nothing else.
Got you.
Other people don't do that. But at the same time, the point I was trying to make in amongst me just slagging off landlordism is, so you've got all these things. How is your home insulated?
Yeah.
I feel like, you can't especially do it. Generationally, there's so many people who'd love to have solar stuff.
You can't do anything. And landlords get no real incentive to be like, oh, I'll make their home more energy efficient.
Landlords won't even give you a decent carpet. Yeah. They won't even, you know, they're...
No, you're so right. Like, I would do so much more, or be capable of doing so much more in terms of my home if I could ever afford to own a home.
Yeah. And the government shouldn't be letting private house builders build houses that aren't completely energy efficient at this stage. It's disgusting. Like, this is where I, like, despair is. I'm like, you know, and you're not doing it, and you could. And I read this article quite recently about this woman who went round Miami Beach, I think it is in Florida, and she went round getting shown around very expensive new waterside properties by, like, high-end estate agents, pretending that she had $10 million to buy a place. And she's a climate scientist, and she literally was like, all of these places are going to be underwater in 5 years, like, or 10 years. Like, this place is not going to exist in 30 years. And she would, like, be walking around, yeah, like, oh, I love it, it's really beautiful. Hey, I've had all this weird chat about stuff being flooded. What's going on? And all the estate agents were like, no, I don't think that's a problem, actually. I don't think it's going to be a problem. And then she, in the article, she'd be like, they don't think it's going to be a problem. So I'm sure that's fine. But it is sort of scary to walk around, I was going to talk about it in my show and I forgot, inhabiting a certain apocalyptic feeling, and then to see how reality is jarring, how people are, like, so short-termist or just so in denial about it.
Yeah, it's total form of denial about it, where it's like, if I just pretend and say this isn't happening, this isn't happening. And, like,
and it isn't yet, so win-win.
Yeah, even, it's going to take, you know, people up to their knees in water to be like, well, no, it is happening, but, you know, we're dealing with the issue, or whatever is going to be, like, the next route. There's always extra layers of that sort of denial that just keep going, that we're sort of moving onto again and again.
The thing that does give me hope and heart is that people live all over the world, right? Yeah. Now, yes, there are places that are suffering intensely already because of climate change, but there are still people who live there who want those things to change and who have power and agency. And I feel like it's not just a case that there's a few people sitting at the top of the world who are like, it doesn't matter to me, who cares? Like, that's not everyone on Earth. And that's not the only people who have power and wealth and agency and stuff like that. And, like, that gives me hope, because I'm like, people are going, everyone is doing different things to try and sort this,
yeah.
And will continue to do
and
so.
We'll continue, yeah.
And that it's not as if people who are currently struggling are in denial about it. They're not, and it's not as if people who aren't. It's not like there's just some people who are refusing to do anything about it, and some people who are struggling.
Yeah.
There's like everyone else on earth, and it's like, do you know what I mean? There's
such
plural.
Absolutely. And I think the really exciting thing at the moment as well is that like all the talk in the US and also here to some extent now of like a Green New Deal happening, like something where it's like kind of Marshall Plan levels of invest. And it is to me probably we've left it so late that that is the only tangible option we have left is a plan. And it either has to be 10 years or it could be, you know, you could maybe extend it to 20 to 30 years, but it has to be a plan where we invest more than we've ever invested before, yeah. On levels we've never seen, in changing how we, the structure of society.
If in the 80s,
yeah.
Everyone had just made little changes, we'd be all right.
Exactly.
Is that it?
Yeah.
If everyone in the 80s had just not eaten beef, we would have been all right.
If in 1988, people had started going, okay, we'll just...
In tune with the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, we got, yeah, and then you had the Olympics.
For the opening ceremony, they could have been like, guys, turn your lights off.
Just if you could stop, if everybody could just take one flight a year. And you could all, and we got rid of coal. So, I mean, like, some amazing statistic, like half of all the emissions that have occurred ever that are causing climate change have occurred since, like, in the last 30 years. Because the amount, like... So half of the warming that's going to happen has all happened since we already globally went, oh, there's a problem, we need to deal with this. And we've done double that, you know, we've doubled since that point, doubled the amount of what we've done.
And do you think a lot of it's people saying, yes, it's bad, but I personally want to be rich?
Not even rich, just don't want to change. I don't know if the rich thing, I think it's they don't want to change. But also then at that point, like the costs of like lots of stuff would have been really high.
Yeah.
But what you would have done is if you invested enough money, then it would have kept coming down to be able to deal with it. So instead of it taking till like 2015 for solar power to get, you know, cheap enough for us to, or wind, if we'd done it 10 years, you know, if we'd properly started at the very start, basically all the governments in the late 80s and early 90s actually were like, this is a really big problem, we need to deal with it. Everybody, Thatcher, everybody went, this is a huge deal, and just nobody did anything about it. Like, there's no policies for like 15 years.
Okay. Is it because of lobbying and
a big part
corruption?
Of that? Yes.
Fuck it.
I'd say a fair amount of it's been misinformation campaigns from people with incumbents who have a lot of, you know, reason to for things to stay the same. Tipping points. Tipping points. Environmental tip of the week. If you do have to go find yourself, why not try finding yourself in Norwich? Environmental tip of the week. Tipping points.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Okay, very quickly, school strikes.
The school strikes.
How have you found? Because I thought, you know, you've had a baby and you're going to have a kid going to school in a few years. Yeah. Would you? I mean, I presume I know the answer to this. Would you like your kid to strike?
I'm really anti the strikes. No, of course. I'm not scared. No, I love it. I'm so proud of them, and it's a thrill. And what's really been exciting too has been, like, I remember I remember sort of being really heartened by millennial activism, which I'm sort of at the very end of.
We're
sort of like elder millennials. There was a stand-up show by somebody called that, but I was very heartened by younger people, and felt like on the whole there was a move towards a kind of more socialist view of the world, apart from the little contingent of fascists.
Sure.
But what's been really thrilling is seeing young people compelled to act. What's really sad is they feel they've been forced into that situation. What's really sad is they're not being given a time free from worry that I feel like my generation in particular had, you know, for all of the flaws of neoliberalism, was it an easier childhood to grow up feeling as if politics was not that relevant? Although, to be honest, it's not as if everyone had that.
Yeah.
It's just, that's quite a middle class
thing.
So I do feel sad for that generation
there's literally no other choice for them anymore.
But I'm so proud of them and I love them. And when I got pregnant, I did become obsessed by climate change. And I know there's debate about whether or not to have a child, but for me personally, I just wanted the future to have good young people in it. Yeah, and also wanted to live a life where loving that person was part of it. I felt like that's better for the world.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, my choice, whatever.
Yeah.
But, since become pregnant, I was just obsessed by climate change, and it's so heartening to see these people actually having the effect of changing the conversation and moving things on, and I so hope that it works.
Yeah.
Because it sort of has to.
I just don't know what I was doing when I was, like, 15 or 12 or whatever. Like, I wonder if there's anything that I would have felt so. I mean, I remember as being a teenager, you feel passionate about stuff.
Yeah.
But I wonder if I'd have felt passionate enough about climate change. I'm just so impressed by all these kids.
Yeah.
I went and kind of looked at the strike and ended up outside the business Department for Business, Energy, and Industrial Strategy with a bunch of activist people who then got some kids to deliver a letter to the climate person.
Well, the first thing this government did was get rid of the Department for Climate Change.
Well,
that solved the problem, didn't it?
Excuse me, not exactly.
We got rid of the police station, so I presume there's no more crimes.
I just find like seeing kids caring about this is like. I'm sure other people like, you know, pictures of cats on the internet.
Factor.
Whatever it is, it makes me start crying by seeing it.
And also, like, I think, so having my baby, I've never felt more like connected to the world and to humanity, to the extent that if I see a lamb or a duckling, I'm like, that's like my baby.
Oh.
And so, yeah, similarly, it's like,
oh, wow.
I love it and I'm proud of them. Yeah. But I feel like anyone listening, if that isn't your opinion, it's so absurd. It's like when people slag off Greta Thunberg, I'm like, really? What have you got?
Yeah.
What have you got? Oh, what she's saying sounds scary. You know? Or it would be like, oh, she seems like, I don't like her. I'm a 50-year-old man. Well, fuck you.
Yeah,
like,
your opinion is not valid at this point anymore.
By saying like, oh, strikes shouldn't be disruptive, it's like, you need to understand what a strike is and what it's supposed to do.
No idea of what it is. The best thing that I saw them saying was like, I think it was maybe someone in Australia said, oh, you need to go to school, you should be going to school to learn about climate science. And she went, well, you don't pay attention to the scientists. so what's the point? And it's just like, just instantly shut that person down. You're just like, yes.
That's what you say. Is that what you've done? So you agree with us? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's just the logic of it's so stupid.
Well, that's what's so interesting about any action you take. The response is trying to shut you down. The longer you're in the game, the more ridiculous they seem. Because they're basically just like, please be quiet. Please do nothing. No matter what it is you're taking actions against, someone will go, yes, but my opinion is, oh, you seem great, but your method, for whatever reason, I've decided is bad. And it's like, it becomes more silly, and I'm more convinced that anyone doing anything, I'm like,
yes.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for doing something.
Well, it's like Extinction Rebellion, which I'm thrilled it exists and I'm glad that so many people have been mobilised, but I've definitely had some uncomfortable feelings about their tactics about getting people arrested.
Right.
Because a friend of mine was one of the Stansted 15 and has basically been convicted on trumped up charges and narrowly avoided prison for a long time. So it's not fun and games to get people arrested. And I've seen lots of activists online saying like, yeah, but what the police are able to do now is gather intelligence on all these people. What they're able to do is prevent them from further protesting. Like, you can see it with brand new eyes of like, wow, thousands of people have been arrested. It's different to ever before. But if you talk to people who have been arrested or have protested and been arrested, it's a bit like, yeah, but guys, the police aren't this benign force on our side. You know, you can't guarantee. And so, like, that's been interesting. But on balance, I'm still going to say, thanks for doing this. I'm glad you're doing this. This is your choice of your strategy, and I support you, but I don't really think I agree with that part of it.
Got you.
Rather than go, I tell you what about these pricks, I hate them, you know.
Yeah, yeah, which is exactly. Like, be supportive to people that are doing stuff.
Yeah, even when it's misguided. And even when, like, it's in from a privileged position, like, you do think there's, like, issues around police racism that, because most of them are kind of older white people, they're getting away from. Like, it's not that it's really, really simple, but at the same time, I'm still like, thanks for trying.
Give it a shot. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Give it a shot. Okay, so you got some questions for me.
Yes.
You'd like to ask.
So when I had my baby,
yes.
The way that I tried to deal with the absolute hysterical fear surrounding the future.
You were messaging me quite a lot.
I decided that Scotland is safe.
Okay.
And in my head, I think that's made me be able to cope. I'm like, tell you what, Scotland, that'll be safe from climate change, and there I shall thrive.
Well, I mean, it's probably going to be one of the places in the world that's least affected by climate change, but the rest of the world will be an inescapable hellhole.
Is it really that full on? Like, how do you...
Yeah, well, I mean... Everything's moving forward, and then obviously you've got sea level rise. Like, Scotland's going to be fairly protected from some sea level rises, but you will get, you know, flooding, rivers and stuff will be a lot higher. But it's more within an international context.
Of course.
What, like, it's fine if Scotland's okay, but it's, I have to deal with, like, fascism or what, you know, whatever it is across the entire world.
If Scotland's like, we're just travelling on as normal. Oh, I've looked out of my telescope. Everyone's having a terrible time. Luckily, they're not coming near us. We're fine.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's silly. It's like people saying, I saw the worst tweet of all time, which was, I think, Lilico. And he said, do we really have more responsibility for stopping climate change than we do for making our children wealthy? And that's what we're up against.
Yeah, people.
People who are going, no, I still want to win this game, but my game.
Yeah.
And I'm happy. And it's the children of men approach, which has a tiny guarded city in the centre of London where people are living wonderfully with exotic pets at the expense of literally everyone else on earth.
Yeah.
And that's what scares me.
It's, but that whole point is completely untrue, the idea that it's a choice between those two things.
Or that you could protect yourself.
No,
like
exactly.
A storm's
gonna go.
How much money you got?
Yeah.
A tsunami will be like, whoa, that guy's wearing a gold topper. He's not getting killed.
Well, there was loads, like, there was wildfires last year where, like, in the States and California, like, that's the interesting stuff when you see really wealthy places and they're on fire. And, you know, Kim Kardashian's having to buy her own fire fighting service. Just like, that's the kind of world.
Okay, this is my question to you. Do you ever think the Book of Revelations is true?
No. But are you suggesting that this...
It's a biblical prediction.
Okay. Maybe this is what they were predicting all along. Maybe it was, and we're all wrong, and that...
Oh! So in that respect, it might make sense to say, at one point, human beings are going to fuck themselves over. Yeah. And that's what they were trying
and
to
tell us. And that's what they were trying to tell us, yeah. Maybe that was what it was all along, like, if you...
It was the friends we made along the way.
it was the black plagues we met along the way.
God, wow. Okay, I have further questions for you.
Okay, keep going.
In terms of the next 10, 15 years in the United Kingdom, let's not say the worst case scenario is going to happen, please. But if things do change, even moderately, how is the UK going to change? Is it like, is London going to change drastically in the next 10 years? Are parts of the UK going to really, really radically alter in the medium term?
Okay, so the next 10 years, probably not so much. I mean, there are, you know, scenarios where it's hard to balance all this out. So London, beyond the end of the century, you know, talking about two centuries away or three centuries away, London could disappear underwater. So the last time...
What about the Shard, though? That'll still be poking out. Those fuckers. That'd be the only part of London. People are like, go see the Shard.
And there'll still be people at the top of it dining.
Yeah, that can't be that bad. Motherfuckers.
In the next 10 years, I don't think much... It'll be where we are now and get a little bit worse. But it'll start... In sort of 10 years' time, that's when things will start ramping up. And then sort of 2040, 2050, you know, we're talking about kind of 20 to 30 years time is when, if we've not globally done a fair amount of work in that time, things will start, the shit will begin to hit the fan. And the problem is that it takes about another 20 years for the climate to stabilise once you stop doing this stuff, because carbon dioxide it's in the air for a while. So like, it's not like if we stop on this day, everything's suddenly better on that day. Another 20, like the system is so complicated. So ideally, if we want everything to be fine in 2050, we need to stop having everything, you know, done in 2030.
This is what's so heartbreaking when you think about new generations, because you think they don't deserve to have that period of time. No one deserves that shit. And I think about my daughter and how much I love her and how much I want her to have a happy time that's blissed out and not stressful.
Yeah.
And it's so sad. And then part of you goes, well, you know, look at the First World War, that was completely unnecessary and brutal and murdered a whole generation. And Second World War, similarly, like, I'm not saying it was unnecessary, but at the same time, it was so full of waste and sadness.
Yeah.
You know, every generation. But then I don't want to say that in kind of like, oh, well, I want to say that in kind of like, no, it shouldn't happen.
But it doesn't need to. Needless. Needless. Absolutely.
The history
of
humanity is often needless shit. But this, again, isn't me saying it's good.
Yeah.
Is this all a joke? Tell me the truth. No, I'm kidding.
How many light bulbs does it take to change a planet?
Can you imagine people getting so angry that the EU was trying to make light bulbs more energy efficient? Like, oh, guys.
Oh, God, they're saving us. They're saving us money over here.
Oh, this is the thing I was going to say. Do you think a lot of the resistance with climate change is because it's on that time scale that people just... It's like with me, right?
Yeah.
I am probably a celiac, but I don't want to admit it. I definitely, if I eat flour, get sick and get like rashes on my arms and like I'm really sick. Don't want to admit it. But I can always kid myself it's not going to happen next time because it's not immediate. It takes like 2 days.
Yeah.
Right? That's what the planet is like.
Yeah. It's just a really...
Just on a slightly bigger scale.
Slightly bigger, but that's exactly it. That's a good analogy.
I don't want to stop eating croissants. They're beautiful.
And the problem is that I guess it's the stopping eating... Yeah, you'd need to stop eating croissants and you need to start doing good stuff. So you need to start, I don't know, like if you don't want to have a heart attack, you need to start going to the gym. Yeah. But the problem is then you need to go to the gym beforehand so that you don't have...
Oh, I see. So people are already having the heart attack and they're like, oh shit, I need to 20 years ago start exercising.
Exactly. So that's kind of where we are.
Oh, fuck. Okay, well...
But yeah, I don't know.
How do you feel... Do you feel more hopeful recently than you did... before all of the Extinction Rebellion climate strike stuff?
Yes, I feel more hopeful now because I think it's brought so much of it to the attention of the wider public and that people...
And nobody can deny it now.
Yeah, well, not at all, yeah. But that hopefully it's a stage where, in the UK anyway, that the government will be forced to do more and do more quickly and be seen to be doing stuff instead of just setting stuff in the future. So I'm definitely more hopeful, but it's like, it does have to happen now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the time to act is in the next 10 years. And if it doesn't... So this is the... I kind of was trying to think about this. There's sort of two options, right? So the UK government, the advisory board for the UK government, the Committee on Climate Change, is coming out with a thing which said we need to go net zero by 2050 the other day. That's the advice, which means we have no emissions in 2050 and we actually are trying to begin to suck stuff out, so more tree things. There's two ways of doing that. There's either doing it really quickly, where you ban cars tomorrow.
But also, there are electric cars now.
Yeah, or you do the electric car, you know, you do the thing which is, you need the infrastructure for that, and you need the supply chains to happen. But it's not that, like, people can buy electric cars now, so you should be supporting them more financially to make people want to buy them. And you should be phasing out the other ones. But also, if you actually want to stop emissions, you need to stop everybody who has a car from driving their car.
Mm.
Like, you would need to have some weird scheme where everybody has to scrap their car in the UK.
I would like to see more government interventions like that.
Yeah.
Firstly, because obviously it's really good. Secondly, because it would boil so much piss. Like, there would be people who would be so angry at their car being taken away from them, and it would be people I don't like.
Yeah.
It would be like real assholes. It would be kind of, you know, you can't even buy an E-Spring anymore. I can't even imagine that thing. People are already angry about nothing.
Nothing.
Like, yeah, how are baked beans halal? Because you don't know what the word means. Right, like, imagine these guys, and then it would be like, oh, I can't even use my car.
Imagine, yeah, exactly. Imagine we gave people something to actually be angry about.
But the problem is, you know, A, I don't want to do things that needlessly upset people. And B, if they got that upset over lies and nothing,
yeah,
imagine how upset they'll be over.
Yeah,
the good thing is they won't be able to get in their car and drive to the,
yeah, exactly,
drive to complain.
Imagine we could harness that anger about nothing into actual anger about climate change.
Yeah. And well, also, like, turn all your anger into positive action.
Exactly. Right?
It's that simple. That's what's frustrating. But do you feel on the whole,
I feel more positive, but I feel like it's like it has to be sustained, and there has to be action on all fronts in the next 10 years. Otherwise, it's...
Does that feel real?
But then the other thing is...
What can I do to help that happen?
We'll be just coming on this podcast.
Thank God. I'm going to have a steak.
Support people that are doing stuff, which we've already talked about.
I support
about.
You.
Yeah, thanks. I support you too. Vote for... I mean, obviously, again, that's one thing that people... You know, it feels small. Like, just vote. You say, like, if you tell people to, you know, cut their carbon footprint, like, kind of stuff we talked about earlier on, right? People go, well, that's just what, you know, an individual is one thing. We need to change the government. And you go, well, the only thing you can have to change government, really, as an individual, is your vote and protesting. So vote and protest.
And also what we can do as comedians.
So there's, like, your personal life, there's your career, and there's your political life. And if you and all of those three spheres are acting positively on climate change and trying to push the envelope as much as you can't do any more than that.
That's so good.
So just keep doing that.
And I suppose it's always the case that in taking action, you feel better.
And it makes you feel so much better.
Also, it's all healthier, isn't it? It's eat healthier.
And it will. Yeah,
get on a bike.
It shouldn't feel, but it's like, yeah, why don't you do some exercise and eat some good food?
I don't know about that.
And go on holiday in a way in which you actually see all of the places on the way to the place rather than just skipping to Mauritius.
Yeah. Which I would love to go to Mauritius. It looks beautiful.
Yeah, I'd like to go there, but I'd like to go there really slowly.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see, there's this programme that was on BBC, I highly recommend it, called Race Across the World.
Oh,
it's on BBC One.
I'd love to do that.
And
that
it's like,
fucking amazing.
It's like two pairs of people, and they have to get to Singapore as quickly as they can without flying from London, and they leave from London, and it's like this race where, and it's like the groups, you can see the frictions between them, and then they're trying to get there before.
Oh, it's the best.
I watched six episodes in like 15 hours or something like that, and they're all like, it was Oh, it was so good. And I was like, I want to do it. We should just do that for everybody. Everybody has to go on holiday, but they have to go. It's a race against your friends.
So listen, we're not saying it's that slow. Yeah. If your friend, if Steve can do it fast, you can do it fast.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hard to not to talk about these things and feel a bit upset, especially because it's connected to how much I love the world in its current state. Yeah. You know?
And that's the thing. It is like, the next show that I'm writing is called It's the End of the World as We Know It, because it is climate change is the current world will not exist because we have altered it. And I think understanding the degrees, like everything we do now and everything we've done in the last 30 years, but it's been done, everything we do going forward will alter the degree of how good or terrible the future is. Wow. To such a degree.
Wow. So there's never been a more important time to try and take action.
Exactly. The best, so like, yeah, I think people, there's some
right.
phrase like,
I'm going to put it in my show.
There's something about like, you know, the best time to have acted would have been 30 years ago. The second best time is right now.
Wow.
Which I think, I don't know who said it. I'll find out and I'll dump it into the podcast. But I think it's like a very good way of seeing things.
Yeah.
Because we still have, you know, it's not too late. It's just that, by what we do, we will either make things more or less shit in the future. It's going to be tough. There will be changes regardless. But if we really worked really hard, we could get it so that there's as minimal change as possible to where we are now. But it is going to change.
Fuck.
So change is coming. If we're ending this, very seriously, I don't know. But it's just like, how much is it going to change?
Okay. So is there a scenario where it doesn't change that much?
Yeah, like 1.5 degrees, what we're sort of aiming for in the Paris Agreement, getting towards 1.5 degrees would be it not changing one that much, but that's still half a degree warmer than where we are now.
Which is too warm.
Which is already...
It's too warm, guys.
Yeah. Do you seem to really like Scotland in terms of... which is good.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, how we spent some time in Scotland. I feel like Scotland's pretty ahead of the curve on a lot of...
It must be stressful for countries like Holland, which I know is like trying really hard. The countries like Denmark, which is trying really hard. It must be really annoying to be like, guys, we're eating all the vegetables and none of you pricks are doing it. You know?
Yeah.
And I feel for people who are like the Campaign for Alternative Technology guys. Like, I've been composting my own shit for 50 years. I don't even use toilet paper. Come on, guys.
Catch up.
Yeah.
Do you want to plug anything?
Just not the world ending.
Yeah, plug action on climate change.
I'm doing a show which is about how do you welcome someone to the world when people are telling you it's the end of the world. So it's very similar.
Amazing.
But the main thing I have at the end of it is just feeling that like you say, like life isn't a tragedy and the future doesn't have to be a tragedy. And also like you say, like it's worth trying.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
No matter what.
Okay. Thanks so much, Josie.
It's my pleasure.
So that was my chat with Josie. It was really lovely to have a chat with her. She's a very enthusiastic person and very curious as well, which is not the case with a lot of people. So it was nice to chat to her. You can go and see her Edinburgh show this year, Tender, at the Edinburgh Festival, at the Stand, I think. Yeah, and you can also see me there. I'm doing a show called It's the End of the World as We Know It every day at the Pleasance Courtyard, 4:25 p.m. You can see other dates of mine at my website, mattwinning.com. And if you want to get in contact with us about the podcast, you can ask questions or say anything at operationearth@gmail.com. Please do rate, subscribe, etc. Give us some 5-star reviews. That would be very much appreciated because we're a very new podcast. And, it's difficult these days because every person in the world literally has a podcast, but this one's hopefully actually about something. So thanks very much. The podcast was produced and edited by Emma Corsham. All the music was by the composer Daniel Drever, and the design and logo was by Chumchi Design. Thanks very much for listening. Let's get cracking.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter.
Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.